Okay, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the We're Having a Good Time podcast. My name's Dusty Slay. I'm your host, and I'm pumped to be here. It's a great day. It's a Monday for me. This is going to come out on a Thursday, but it's a Monday for me. I'm getting it done early, trying to go back out to the cabin for a little bit. Yeah, I'm pumped. I just want to throw it out there once again. Mark your Netflix calendars, July 29th. My new Netflix, Wet Heat, will come out. So just mark your calendars. We're having a good time. It's so hot. And I don't know if I talked about this last week, but, you know, I talk about how I like the wet heat and how I actually for years I've talked about how I've liked the heat. And then I complained for so long, and I felt like my complaints were legitimate. I complained that it was like a cloudy and kind of cold May and June, and I was like, where's the heat? And then it came in hard and fast, and I feel like I can't handle it this year. I don't know what's happened. It's just too hot for me. After Zany's last week, I tried to have a cigar hang, and it was like 90 degrees. I've still not had a cigar. We're going on 3 weeks now. I've still not had a cigar. And a big part of that is it's just too hot. I got out there. I was at the cabin. I started doing some things that I want to do. Oh, fruit tree update. One of my small, very small peach trees has 4 small peaches on it. That's the first fruit I've generated out on the land, and it's amazing. I didn't get a video. I didn't even have my phone down there either time I was down there, but it's monumental. I want to mark the tree as the first tree to produce fruit. But I was out there cleaning them up. I was opening up the cages, weed eating around, and then putting down mulch. And I think I did 5 trees in the morning with the help of the kids. I got very sweaty. And then I went back out in the afternoon and I did 6 trees. Kind of Hannah and the kids helped, you know, a little bit in the morning, but I did it by myself in the afternoon. And I just got too hot. I felt good while I was working, but then when I finished, I just was too hot. And I just needed I basically took a cold shower and wound down. And, man, it was just too much. And I've honestly not been in. That was, what is today, Monday? That was Friday. And I've just not been into the heat at all since that time. I don't even want to be outside in it. I don't know. It did something to me. And I wasn't into it. So I've just been relaxing. I've really been soaking up the air conditioner. Yesterday, I watched about 4 or 5 episodes of Cobra Kai. Actually, I don't know, probably like 7 episodes. I love the show Cobra Kai. I'm not finished with it. I'm on season 6. I believe it's the last season. But I love that show. I loved Karate Kid as a kid. And now I love Cobra Kai. So I'm into it. But I did get, you know, mulch around 11 of the trees. There's still, you know, 30 to go or so. So there's a lot of trees to be done. But everything looks pretty good. I think it's just going to get drier and drier. I did have a guy come out from Kindred. I don't know if it's Farms is what they call it. Oh, I got an email I want to read here, so I don't want to lose that. I'll get their name right. But we're gonna partner up and do some stuff. They are a company that's all about getting rid of invasive species in the woods and in the grasses, and they're about you know, cultivating the woods in a way, because I had things mulched before. I had a mulcher go through there, get rid of the small trees, leave the big trees. And he told me that mulching can be really good. He said, but, you know, he said, likely, you know, there's a chance you killed a lot of baby oak trees. And that made me really sad. And I might have left invasive species that were really big and killed native species that were really small that just needed more sunlight. So what they do is kind of come in, get rid of the invasives, find out, like, let's say I have a lot of one tree that may be a native, but I could get rid of it. And they'll get rid of some of those to open the woods up for more trees. Like, I want more oaks. I got a lot of poplars, but I want more oaks. And he said oaks need lots of sunlight. So, and then he's all about recreating prairies and bringing those back, which is what I'd like to do. There's a lot of land out there that I don't necessarily need per se, like, you know, and I'm just mowing it all the time. I don't want to be mowing it. What I'd like to see is some of these southern prairies come back and have native, you know, flowers and grasses out there, because the animals like that more. The animals, the insects, the pollinators, they like that more, and I'm into that. I listen to an hour-long podcast by them, and I really enjoyed it. So I wonder if I could, I'm going to try to, okay, I know where that's at. I'm going to try to find this thing. Yeah, Kindred Land Management is what it's called. And I watched this hour-long thing that they did, and I loved it. I'm all about it. I'm all about it. So what we're going to do is we're going to try to partner up. And so some of the upcoming land videos will maybe be, you know, them kind of actually giving some instruction on what they do, how to, because they need content too. So we're going to try to pair up and get me some more land content, but also get them some instructional video content. I think that will really be good. So we're going to try to do that. That was exciting. I just had him walk the land because he pulled up right as I was finishing up my whole tree project, and I was tired. I did not want to walk the land. I had been all over that place. So I'm tired. I'm taking recovery. I'm hungover from work. That's what's funny. My first special is called Working Man. And it's basically came from me having a lot of jobs, but I don't like working. I've never liked it. I like, what do we call it? Piddling. I like piddling. I like messing around out there, but I don't like working. And then, you know, wet heat. I'm like, I like a wet heat. I don't want any heat. I like 70 degree weather and a breeze. That's what I want. You know, and then I want to be able to complain about all the weather. That's what I want. But it's too dang hot. And I'm not afraid to complain about it. Listen, I'm not afraid to complain about the heat. I'm not afraid to complain about the cold. I'm not afraid to complain about perfect weather. I can do it all. Cloudy, clear, sunny, dreary. I can complain about it all. I can complain with the best of them. Complaining is my favorite pastime. If I can find a guy or girl and just sit around and complain about stuff, I'm into it. We got to equally get some time on the mic, you know, just to be like, what are you upset about? And then I'll go, yeah, I'm upset about this. Hopefully it's something we can both be upset about, and then we can really relate. All right, let's, speaking of complaints, let's read this email. This is in regards to my conversation about how much I hate ducks on the dashboard of a Jeep. Now, keep in mind, what does it matter what I think? What does it matter if I think it looks stupid to have ducks on the dash of your Jeep? What difference does it make? It doesn't matter. You do whatever you want to do. You do what makes you feel good. I think it's dumb, but there's probably things I do that you think are dumb. And that's okay. That's what's fun. That's what's fun about living a real complaining type of life, is I realize that my life is good. I'm not trying to act like I don't have a good life. But don't take one of my favorite things away from me, which is complaining. Don't take it from me. Don't try to take it from me with some positive message. Yeah, I realize it could always be worse, couldn't it? How many times have we heard that in our lives to the point where it's like, yeah, it could always be worse. I get it. It also could always be better, I think. You know what I mean? Like, that goes both ways. I wrote a little poem one time, and it was basically about, you know, they could always be worse. Like, I was, say I'm driving in a car and I'm complaining. I look to the left and someone has a Ferrari, and then I look to the right and some guy's on a bike. And I'm complaining because my car's raggedy. I want to be in the Ferrari, but I could be on the bike. But I think that you just take that poem and go in reverse and you go, oh, I'm so happy that I'm not on the bike, but I could be in this Ferrari. But no, that is the wrong way of thinking. That's coveting, when you want something that other people have. And I actually think coveting is destroying the world. That's not the kind of complaining I like. I don't like coveting. I just like complaining. All right. Does any of this make sense? I don't know. Here we go. Here's the email. Hey, Dusty. As of last week, I became a first-time Jeep owner. Like you, I had no idea what the ducks in the Jeeps meant. I've since joined a few Jeep Facebook groups. They immediately get involved in some type of a cult when you own a Jeep. I've since joined a few Jeep Facebook groups and have quickly learned what the deal is with all the ducks. Quick side note, this is in the email, this side note. Even now, after learning about the story, I still don't plan to participate heavily in the act. Well, give it some time, buddy. You just got a Jeep, you're already in some Jeep groups, and you're already admitting, I'm not going to do it heavily, I may do a duck or two. But that's what every drug addict, every alcoholic says. I may just mess around with it a little bit. Here we go, continuing on. Here's what I've learned in the last couple of days. Ducking Jeeps was born out of a simple, pure, and honorable action. Okay. Allison would tell you that she never thought it would become a thing. In fact, the first time she ducked someone, it was because they appeared to be having a bad day, and her only thought was to make them feel better. I'm sure Allison was a real sweetheart. Okay, here we go. Nobody could have known that this single, simple act of kindness would bloom coast to coast and beyond and become part of Jeep tradition. I already hate it. I'm going to be honest with you. I already hate it. But here we go. What is Duck Duck Jeep? The Duck Duck Jeep craze was started in Ontario, Canada, where my wife is from, by the mother ducker, Allison Parliament. Allison is from Ontario, Canada, but works in Alabama, where I'm from. In July 2020, Allison Parliament, while back at home in Bancroft, Ontario, Canada, was approached by strangers because of her Alabama Jeep license plate and attacked verbally because of pandemic concerns. Instead of fighting back, Allison Parliament bought a giant yellow rubber duck and placed them on a fellow Jeep owner with a note and posted it on Facebook. The post went viral and the Duck Duck Jeep craze started, and hopefully it doesn't end anytime soon. This is all part of the email. And now some words for me. I hate this. I hate it so much. Okay, here we go. First off, this lady, we don't know what she does for a living. It doesn't matter. But she's driving instead of flying from Bancroft, Ontario, down to Alabama. And she's just driving, just enjoying her life, just living her life in 2020. And some people attack her because of COVID. And it says, instead of fighting back, which is what she should have done, she should have told these people they were idiots, okay? I was sitting in a doctor's office, and this was long after. This was probably 2022, and I was in the lobby, and I had my mask down below my nose because it's stupid. They made me wear the mask, and I needed to be, I went to the dermatologist. I needed to get something checked out, and everything was fine. And this lady, I was sitting in my seat first, okay? I was sitting off on my own, around no one. And this lady came and sat pretty close to me. And then she goes, "Can you put your mask above your nose?" And I said, "No." I said, "This is ridiculous that we're even doing this." And so anyway, I'm just saying, I said, "No." This is what Alice in Parliament should have done. But instead, Alice in Parliament's like, "Oh, you're attacking me because of a pandemic concern, huh? Let me go," and I don't know what the note said, but she goes, "Let me go get a rubber duck and put my hands all over it and then put that in your Jeep with a note because you're so scared of COVID. Let me put some physical things inside your car from me. Let me scare you even more." If Alice in Parliament had found a dead duck and then thrown it in the front seat of the Jeep, that's a trend I could get into. Dead ducks on in the cars of people that attack you for no reason because of their own fears. And I am very sympathetic to people throughout the whole COVID thing. Whatever, you know, I know different people have different levels of health, different age levels, different many different things, and people have different fear levels, and I was always very respectful of other people, but I do not like being told what to do. I don't like being told how to live my own life, and so I don't, okay, so here we go. Let's continue on with the email. Allison was a light in the dark, and her simple act of kindness is now part of Jeep's history. So Allison ruined Jeeps. Sad news. As if this whole email's not been sad. Alice in Parliament, founder of the world-famous Jeep ducking craze, passed away unexpectedly of natural causes on June 22nd, 2024. Okay, well, that's grim and vague. Thanks for reading, Dusty. Just wanted to share the story with you as we all learn something new every day. All right, so I'm not going to read the name of the person. By the way, I appreciate you sending that email. I enjoyed reading it, but it does not make me feel better about ducks on a Jeep. And again, it just plays in to another thing I hate. This whole let's cuss, but use another letter so we're not actually cussing. When the first time she ducked someone, the mother ducker, ducking Jeeps, it's like, that's what we're doing out here. We just want to say the F word, but we want to get cute with it. "Oh, I ducked you. You just got ducked." And it's like at Hattie B's. I love Hattie B's. That's the hot chicken place here in Nashville. I love Hattie B's. But they're hottest thing is shut the cluck up. That's what it is. It's like, I hate it. I hate it when restaurants try to get cute and use, you know, foul language, but being like, "Oh, we're not cussing because we've changed the word." And it's like, yeah, you're not cussing, but you're cussing though. You are doing it. First time she ducked someone. I mean, I saw a Jeep the other day. There was ducks all over the Jeep. And you got to wonder, if Allison gave someone a duck for the first time she ducked someone, it was because they were rude to her. Then when you see a person with a ton of ducks in their Jeep, how rude are they? I mean, are we just seeing so many nice people out here compared to so many rude people where they're like, "Oh man, I got a lot of ducks because I keep flipping people off. I keep telling people how to live their lives." I hate it. And you don't have to take the ducks off of your dash if you like it. But I think it looks dumb. And I think Jeeps are super cool. And I think we're ruining it with this. There's a lot of ways people ruin their cars, I think. I think bumper stickers is another one. I don't like bumper stickers. I'm not a fan of them. Putting your political opinions out there on your bumper sticker, I don't know why they do it. Again, if you like it, you do it. But I think there's a lot of ways we ruin our cars. Personally, I like the idea of us, everybody driving plain cars. I like us having a selection of about two or three cars. You have a truck, an SUV, and a sedan. And they're all good. They all look good, but they all look the same. And then we just have modes of transportation. And I know that feels like probably some kind of communist thing. But I'm just saying, then we all have modes of transportation, but we're not, you know, trying to put status symbols out there for everyone. Because I think a lot of people go into huge debt to look good as they ride around. And then people also, you know, they're like, I don't want to go into huge debt. I'm just going to drive this car until the wheels fall off, as we used to say. And you just, after a while, you look poor. You look poor because you made a good financial decision. You might have more money in your bank account, but, you know, people think you're broke. And that's what I'm all about. I'm all about that. Now, you know, I got my wife a new car because this is mainly why. Because we have kids now, and we'd never had an SUV, and we needed something that could haul a few people around. But we did go with a Toyota Highlander. We didn't go, you know, I want to buy, you know, a Suburban or what is that? I rented a car like this. I forget what it's a Wagoneer is what it's called. That's what I want, a Wagoneer. I want a Wagoneer and I want a Chevy Silverado. Those are in my want category because I think Chevy Silverados are awesome. I think it's the best. You know, I told somebody how much I love Z71s and they go, well, Z71's just a package on the truck. It's not actually the kind of the truck. And I had no idea. I had never heard that. I've been liking Z71s for 30 years. I had no idea that was true. But I like a Chevy Silverado. I think they're a good looking truck. But I made the, what I feel like is the smart move. And I went with a Toyota because it has a good, consumer rating. And I got a Toyota Highlander, I got a Toyota Tacoma, right? They're not flashy. They look good, but they're not flashy. But when my wife moved down here, her dad bought her a car. Her dad, she had never had a car. She never got a car. She didn't get a driver's license till she was in her 30s. She lived in Toronto. There's really no need for it. And so her dad bought her a car. I think the car he would have bought her when she was 16 if she started to drive. And it was a Honda Civic. It was a very nice car. And she hit a deer doing a comedy gig and totaled her car. And then my car, my Volvo S60 that I loved, a car that I still think about. It's my favorite car I've ever owned. We went to get her a car, and I could see my car was just leaking all kind of thing. It had 317,000 miles on it. And I started this thing. I sold my car in 2012, and I just rode a bike for 2 years, and I saved money. I already had a little savings, but I began to save money. So when I bought the Volvo, I had enough money to buy it in cash. It was used, 100,000 miles on it. And I had enough money to pay in cash. So the moment I bought the Volvo, I started another thing. I had a savings, just a car account. And I would just put money in the car account all the time. So by the time I was ready to buy another car, I had cash to buy my other car. Instead of having a car payment, I just was putting money in this account like it was a car payment. And so we went to the dealership. Hannah got a nice chunk of money from her car because her car was practically brand new. And so we bought a Toyota Camry and a Toyota Corolla at the same time because I felt like the Corolla was the equivalent to the Civic and the Camry was, you know, basically an equivalent to the Volvo. But boy, was I wrong. I liked that Corolla, but man, it was not nearly as nice as that Honda Civic. The Honda Civic was a nice car. So I felt bad that Hannah lost her Civic for the Corolla. So I bought her the new car and I bought the used truck. I don't know how I got on that, but that's where I'm at with that. I just think that this car is an unnecessary expense. It's consumerism. Our whole country is trapped by total consumerism. I'm trapped by it too. We all are in different ways. I buy a lot of DVDs. I buy, you know, I got so much podcast and camera equipment that I barely use. And it's ridiculous. I am going to put it all to use one day. But we're all consumers. We're built in it. My kids, I mean, they get so many gifts. My friend from Alabama just came to visit me the other day, and he brought several toys for my kids, and it was very nice. He took, you know, time to think about gifts for them, and they love the gifts, but they get so many presents that new gifts, it almost means nothing to them. It's exciting for them to tear open the boxes and go, oh, yeah, some new trucks. But in a few moments, they're already back to, you know, just playing with whatever, because it doesn't mean anything to them to get new things. So I'm on a real quest when I take my kids to the store make sure that I don't buy them anything. Now, there is some exceptions. Like I say, I'm a consumer, but I ordered Sam what I thought was a comic book offline. He loves The Incredible Hulk. And I thought I ordered him a comic book, but it was ended up being some other kind of thing. It looked like a comic book, but it was, I don't know. I don't even know what it is. It's got a good-looking cover. So I was pretty disappointed by it. So I looked up, and here in our area in Donelson, right next to Hermitage, where I live, Hermitage, and there's a comic book store. So I went, I took the kids to the comic book store. Now, I bought them things, but I did take them to that store to buy them things. It's like when I go to Walmart to pick up something, or I go to Target to pick up something, or the grocery store. Daisy wanted a balloon in the grocery store the other day. I'm like, you don't need a balloon. And I left the store and we didn't get a balloon. It felt good. But when I'm just going to pick up other things, they don't get a gift just because we're in the store. And that's my new quest. You're not just getting things. But if I go, hey, let's go to the comic book store today. Let's walk around, look at some things, and you can get a couple of toys. I bought Sam a Batman toy, and I bought Daisy, a unicorn stuffed animal. And then I bought, I say I bought it for Sam, but I really think I bought it for myself. I bought a big, like, hardback Incredible Hulk book. He loves it, though. Hannah reads it to him. I love to buy books, but I don't really get into it too much. I don't get into reading as much as I'd like to. I have slipped on my Bible reading again, too. I was reading it every day, and then something happened. I think it was when I got shingles. I don't even know if I ever talked about getting shingles on here or not, but I had shingles. I got shingles for a while. I'm trying to write a joke about it, so I don't want to get too detailed, but I got shingles on my leg. Felt like I had a tingling, burning sensation on the inside of my knee, like I had burned myself. And then I just had really a lot of pain in my leg. My whole leg hurt so bad. I was walking with a limp for a while because my leg hurt so bad. I mean, internally, it would move all throughout my leg and then up my lower back. And then a rash broke out, a hideous rash broke out on my leg. And I went to the doctor about it, and they gave me some, like, antiviral medication, and it eventually went away, but it took a while. I was doing shows. I was out here just flying around the country doing shows with shingles all over my leg. Fortunately, it wasn't in any visible places. And they say that there is some contagion to some degree, but I think it's, you get these, the rash will eventually blister. And when it blisters, that's the part. You have to touch that. And so I was hanging out with some people and they didn't get it. So I wouldn't tell anyone until I knew no one got it. But I did some big shows. I had to go out with a shingled up leg. I would go to the venue with, like, you know, track pants on and then change into jeans when I got there because it was pretty painful. Pretty awful experience. I don't recommend it. But, you know, when I was a kid, now someone told me I was wrong about this, but I remember this. I don't know why I wouldn't remember it, but they said they wanted us to get chicken pox. They wanted all the kids to get chicken pox because they say if you don't get chicken pox as a kid, you're at risk to get it as an adult. And when you get it as an adult, it's shingles and it's very painful. It's worse. It's awful. That's what they said. That's what they said. I remember it. But when I went to the doctor about my shingles, he said, "Have you had chicken pox?" And I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "Well, if you've ever had chicken pox, the virus now lives inside of you." And they also like to throw it in the category with herpes. There's some like herp, and I'm like, everything can't be herpes, guys. Let's come up with new names. I know there's like genital herpes, and that's the one that you really don't want to get, right? But I'm like, let's not even call the other stuff herpes, right? Like fever blisters are a kind of herpes, but like, let's not call it that. Let's find a different name for it. It's not fair. And listen, if you have genital herpes, I got nothing against you. You know what I mean? It's like, everybody's got some problems out here. But I'm just saying, it shouldn't be called the same thing. Let's call genital herpes, that's herpes. Everything else has different names. We can make the scientific name fever blister if you want. We can make the scientific name shingles, but let's not put herpes, let's not involve that word with any of this stuff. That's what I say. There are a lot of things like that. I don't even know some of the definitions, but you have like first degree murder, second degree murder, third degree murder, manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter. It's like, we got to come up with different terms. I don't know. I mean, manslaughter, that feels like murder. I don't know. I don't know how you can slaughter a person and not murder them, you know? I slaughtered that guy. That just seems intense to me. Okay. Okay. Also, I'm going to read another email here, and then I'm going to follow up with I got invited to speak at my high school. This is not the email, but I've been invited it says, "Would you be available and interested in speaking to the teachers and staff of the Opelika City Schools to welcome everybody back to the new school year?" That would be amazing. The date, I actually think, is not going to work for me, which is very sad because that would be awesome. I'd love to do that. I mean, dang, how fun would that be? Who doesn't want that opportunity, I feel like? I mean, that's the opportunity for me. Listen, I was always a good kid. I was always a good kid. But around when I turned 16, I started to get into things. So probably like it was junior year and senior year when I really started to be a bit of a nuisance. I was still very fun, but I was really getting into weed and other stuff. And I was a bit more of a nuisance, and I was partying a lot. But I was always a good kid. But to be invited back to speak to the school is just, it's a real honor. And I want to do it. I just don't think that date's going to work. And that's really too bad because I'd love to. I don't know what I would do. They want me to speak from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., which is pretty early. And I think I've talked to this lady who sent the email. Man, that'd be awesome. I may try to figure out a way to work it out because I think it would be cool. I don't even know what I would do for an hour. I couldn't just do a stand-up routine, but I could talk about being at the school a little bit. You'd hate for them to hate it. but it doesn't matter. Okay, here we go. Most of the teachers that I was at school with are gone now. Okay, here's something. All right, the reason I'm reading this one is because it ends in what I want to talk about. And it's kind of sad. All right. Hey, Dusty, just wanted to say I love the podcast, and maybe I said on a previous email or not, but it's refreshing with no ads. Thank you. I pride myself on no ads. I did want to say this. I want to do full disclosure because I hate this. I see this sometimes. I see that, especially in the Christian world, I'll see this. I'll see someone say, there was a lady I used to follow a lot, and I really liked the writing she did. I really liked the information that she put out there. But she would always say, I gave up a career in music to, you know, follow ministry, you know. And I'm just like, I never heard of you as a musician. So I just always hate it when people act like they made this ultimate sacrifice when... what was the sacrifice, right? Now, I'm not saying she didn't sacrifice because I don't know, but I just always hate it when people claim they gave up so much. And I'm like, did you though? So I just, full disclosure, people are not beating down my door to advertise on this podcast, right? I feel like I could get sponsors if I wanted. If I reached out, I could get them. And I don't. Because I like doing this podcast and I like doing it the way I want to do it. And I feel like the moment people start paying you to do things, then you can't start criticizing them. Thankfully, Nate Land has gotten rid of Mountain Dew so I can begin to criticize Mountain Dew again. What a garbage drink that is. What a garbage drink it is. All sodas, they all have high fructose corn syrup in them and they're all killing us. I drink a Coke now and again. I've given them up. I'm on a new health path. But they're all garbage. Ginger ale, the ginger ale and ginger beer that I had been drinking for so long with cigars. I read the package one day and I was like, oh, high fructose corn syrup and this too. Even the ginger beer I like. Now, there are some ginger beers without it. And I think there are some sodas without it. But all the mainstream ones, it's all garbage. All garbage. Okay, here we go. And I just don't want people telling me what to do. And he says, he continues on, even if there was one or two, that would be fine. But seems like today some go crazy with it. I enjoy the rants, the stories, and some music talk. I believe on one of the podcasts, people were complaining about something to the tune of a rant. I don't know what that means. But let's continue on. I appreciate it. I am an over-the-road trucker that lives in the Central Florida area, so can't wait until you hit Florida again. But I've been binging your COVID episodes on selling pesticides and your stories about Stu. Curious if he's still around and if you talk to him still. Okay, well, that leads to some news that I just found out the other day, some sad news. And if you've listened to this podcast for a while, you know that I talked about Stu Barber to a great extent and that I work with Stu Barber when I worked as a pesticide salesman. And Stu passed away on June 11th. And... it made me pretty sad because, you know, I only worked with Stu for 4 years. I worked with Stu for 4 years and then I, kept in touch with him for the next couple of years while I worked for Spectracide. When I worked with him, I'd like to talk about Stu a little bit. I'd like to spend some time talking about it. I just found his obituary, which I had not read. So I may read that on the podcast just to give you a little something. I'm just finding out that his middle name was Claire. That's interesting. But he, I worked with Stu for 4 years. He was my boss and I was a seasonal guy. So I would come in every year around March and then work till, let's say, August, sometime shorter, probably never longer than that. And then I would be gone for the winter, and then I would come back and work with Stu again every year. And me and Stu spent a lot of time sitting in his truck while he smoked cigarettes, and we talked to each other. And it was huge for me. It's huge for my life, for my development. And I'll go into more detail. But and then once Stu retired, I took Stu's job. And then I would meet up with Stu periodically. We would meet at like a TGI Fridays or something like that. And we would both drink vodka sodas, which is not my drink. That was what Stu drank. I was just drinking what he was drinking. And we would drink vodka sodas. I mean, I'd be, you know, working. But that didn't bother me. I never had any kind of moral stance around drinking on the clock. But we would drink vodka sodas, and then I'd go back to work. It was usually not a productive day for me after that. But I would do it. And, you know, we talked. And, you know, Stu during that time was, and then that was it. That was it, right? I mean, those days ended in 2012. We worked together until, I would say, 2008 or 2009 is when we stopped working together. And then I would periodically see him. And I remember seeing him probably on a Tuesday. I decided to quit drinking on a Monday. I decided to quit drinking on a Monday, and I saw him on a Tuesday, and I was the fattest I had ever been, and Stu told me that I look like shit, and pardon the language, and that I needed to lose weight, and he hooked me up with a diet plan. And this was, you know, a lot of people think this is harsh, that that's harsh, that, oh, he shouldn't have told you that. But it's what I needed to hear. If Stu had said, oh, you look really good, great to see you, looks like you're doing well, I might not have changed. But with Stu telling me that, he's like, I've known you for years, and this is the worst you've ever looked. And I followed his diet plan. And I lost, you know, 40 pounds in 2 months. And the next time I saw Stu, I don't know how familiar, well, most people listening to this, if you're, unless you're in Charleston or from Charleston, you're not going to know. But I would ride a bike from my apartment on King Street, downtown Charleston, basically King and Calhoun. I would ride a bike from there all the way out to the Isle of Palm connector to meet Stu. So the next time I rode a bike that far, that's a good 30 to 40 minute bike ride that I did over the bridge, over the big bridge in Charleston. And I met Stu the next time we met up, and I had lost the weight, and Stu was very happy to see it. And, you know, it made me happy to, you know, be talked to like that and then turn it around. Because I will say, on that day, I wasn't like, oh, this is great advice, I'm glad he said that to me. It really pissed me off. I'll be honest with you. I was like, wow, that was some rude shit. But it motivated me. I go, oh, okay, I look bad, huh? Well, I'll show you. And then I did. I turned it around, and Stu was very excited about it. And, you know, I feel like that I've been, you know, I've been sad about this, but I've almost, it feels like I'm almost trying to manufacture more sadness at times. But I think I'm mainly just upset with myself because I didn't make more of an effort to try to see Stu when I was back in Charleston. It's just one of those things where you kind of think, in the back of my mind, I go, well, I know Stu's getting old, and who knows when, you know, when he's going to pass. But I just would be like, well, next time I'm in town, I'm going to make sure I see Stu. And I don't know if Stu would even want to hang out with me. I mean, to me, Stu was a friend and a mentor. But for all I know, to Stu, I was just a guy he worked with for a while and you know, enjoyed seeing from time to time. But I don't know that many people that knew Stu. I didn't know his family. I met his wife a couple of times. I went to church with Stu a couple of times when I was working with him. So I don't know him that well, or I don't know his family that well. So I don't know. I called the only guy that I thought knew Stu really well, and we talked about him for a while. But in my conversation with him, it felt like he didn't even know Stu that well. So I don't know. I don't have people to talk to about Stu. And then it's like, I don't expect to be invited to the funeral, because I guess you aren't invited to funerals. But I just, there was no one, you know, to reach out to me and say, hey, this guy that you revered so much has passed away. This guy that you've talked extensively about is gone. And so it bummed me out, because I feel like had I made more of an effort to see him, that maybe there would have been people that, you know, let me know and I would have been able to go to the funeral or something. And that's the thing that makes me sad. But and the fact that now I know that I'm not going to see Stu. There never will be another time when I get to see him. Now, I text him when my first Netflix came out. I sent him the link. He never responded. I don't know if he was a texter. I'd called him a couple of years ago, talked to him, and I did tell him, you know, how much he impacted my life. So he did know that. But I never got, I don't think he ever came to a show. I don't think he came to my show when I was there last time. I don't know that he didn't. He didn't tell me he did. But I always wanted him to see a show. Him and the guy, Chuck, that I talked to about Stu, they came to one of my very first shows in Charleston. Now, this is, I don't even consider myself doing comedy at this time, even though I attempted it a little bit. But this was probably 2004 or 2005. Stu and this guy, Chuck, came to my show. And as far as I know, that's the only comedy Stu ever saw me do, unless he watched my Netflix. So I really wanted him to come to a show. That was the thing that bothers me the most, is that I, you know, because he talked to me at a time when, you know, my life was basically, you know, I was basically doing nothing. I was working for him part-time. I was drinking every night. I was showing up hungover every day. I was living on the beach. I was just kind of wasting my life away. And Stu would always give me this advice. He would say, at your age, if you're not working 60 hours a week, saving money, you're just wasting your time. He gave me so much financial advice and moves that had I taken it, I would be in a much wealthier position. I would have bought a house in Charleston in 2000. You know, I could have done it by 2008. If I had bought a house in 2008 in Charleston, I would be in a much wealthier position than I am. But, you know, he gave me lots of advice. We had lots of time talking. He shared so many stories with me, and so many that, you know, I don't even remember. And I always thought, well, I'll take some podcast equipment and I'll talk with Stu and I'll get him to tell me some of those stories again and I'll record them and then I'll have them recorded. But I never did it. And I'm not, you know, trying to tell anybody anything, but, you know, if you have old people in your life that you want to record their stories, you know, do it, because, you know, one day they'll be gone. And every time, I just feel like I get like this about everything. Like when Nick Saban retired, when Bill Belichick retired, when an actor dies, when Kenny Rogers died, when Charlie Daniels dies, it just seems like it's an era of life that's now gone. And in this ever-changing world, in a world that I don't see changing in a positive way, I don't see it getting better. In some ways, yes, it's getting better. I mean, it's like we can reminisce about, times where people had it harder but had it simpler. But if you were actually living that time, you're like, oh, that was actually a miserable time to be alive. But it just feels like eras are gone and, you know, we don't get them back. And it bums me out. I'm going to read, and I'm not trying to bum you out here. I'm going to read a little bit of this. Stuart Claire Barber, 85, of Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, peacefully passed away on Wednesday, June 11th, 2025, at home with his family. Private services will be held in East Aurora, New York, at a later date. Arrangements. Stu was born on June 14th, 1939. Now, before I move on, I just want to say two things. June 14th, that's Flag Day. That's a prominent day for our country that no one celebrates anymore. People are actually offended by the flag these days. We used to have Flag Day and people would put a flag out. And there are actually people that live in this country that are American citizens that are offended by the flag, which is unbelievable to me. I find the best way to overcome those kinds of things, because what happens is they see someone that they don't agree with politically waving the American flag and they say, well, that makes me not want to wave it. But you have to take it back. You have to wave it yourself and be proud that you live in this country. But June 14th is also the birthday of my grandfather that I never met, my dad's dad. I never met him. And it's also the birthday of my sister, a sister who was 11 years older than me and had a big part in raising me. So I just think that's an interesting date. Stu was born June 14th, 1939 in Bradford, Pennsylvania, son of late Arthur Claire Barber and Jean Stewart Barber. Stu began playing football at an early age, often telling the story of wearing his grandmother's boots because they pinched his feet and made him run faster. Stu was an incredible athlete in many sports. He broke his own father's high school shot. He broke his own father's high school shot put record and received a full scholarship offers in both basketball and football. He chose football and played for Penn State as a senior and received All-American honors as an offensive tackle. It was at Penn State where Stu met the love of his life, Vicky. They met in December and married in July, and it must have been true love as Vicky spent their honeymoon in Evanston, Illinois, while Stu was at training camp. The honeymoon finale was attending an All-American game where, when the owner of the Dallas Cowboys learned she was on her own, graciously invited her to be his guest. Upon graduating college in 1961, Stu was drafted in the fourth round by the Buffalo Bills and also by the Dallas Cowboys of the NFL in the third round. He elected to go with Buffalo, and over the next nine seasons, played in 112 consecutive games, was a five-time All-AFL selection, and appeared in four AFL All-Star games. He was a member of both of the Bills' AFL championship teams. Stu retired from playing in 1969 after a stint in private business, got into professional coaching with the World Football League, eventually leaving to return to the Bills as a talent scout. Stu went on to become the vice president and general manager of the Bills from 1979 to 1982. After his final retirement from the Bills, Stu returned to private business, eventually moving to Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, where he and his wife Vicky built their dream home. Stu was a humble man with an incredible work ethic that he passed down to his children. Stu's five daughters will remember him as their gentle giant and greatest supporter. They all knew not to change the channel on Sundays and make sure they hid a piece of dessert before their dad finished it all. Stu was survived by his wife of 63 years, Vicky Barber of Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, his three daughters, Tracy Ritker of East Aurora, New York, Jennifer Beal, he was preceded in death by his daughters, Michelle and Rebecca Barber. Stu's last words to any of us whenever we left him were always, watch out for the other guy. We know he's now watching out for us. Go Bills. Okay, no mention of me in there. Now, that's funny to me because when I worked with Stu, that was the At first, I learned about him working at the playing for the Bills and stuff. And it was like, you know, to me, this is a famous guy. I had never, you know, worked with a famous guy. So I went and Googled him or whatever the search engine was at the time. And I pulled up some stuff about him now being semi-retired, living in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. And I said to Stu, jokingly, I go, yeah, but it didn't mention me in there. It didn't say anything about me. And Stu really had a look like I was serious about it. Like I was really like acted like I was this big part of his life. But that's very interesting. I did know that one of his daughters passed away. I didn't know about the other. That's too bad. But there is a book here to buy, so I'm going to buy that. But yeah, I learned about this through an email from Paul. And it was sad to read. I mean, I'm glad he did, because if not for Paul sending me this email, good morning. I was saddened to learn that Stu Barber passed away on June 11th. When I Googled him a couple of weeks ago, he had already passed away, but this information had not made it to whatever page I saw. There are a few old men at church that have been great encouragers over the years. A couple of them were are 90-ish, and I try to talk to them every time I see them. I never know if this will be my last conversation with them. Glad you got to know Stu Barber. Sounds like he was a great guy. Thank you, Paul, because Paul sent me that email, and that's how I learned of it. And when I called Chuck, Chuck didn't know either. So I guess this did not make it up the Spectracide chain. Not that I would be on that chain anyway. But it was great, you know. Stu taught me a lot of things. Stu taught me about dating. I know I've talked about him extensively, but, it's like, this is not to take away anything from the people that raised me. My family, you know, taught me many great things, but this is just kind of a time in my life where I was like, not escaping, but I was like, I moved away from everything I had ever known. I moved from Opelika, Alabama to Charleston, South Carolina, you know, and I was basically a lost kid out here. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know why I had moved to Charleston. I didn't know what my plan was. I didn't have a career in mind. I wasn't going to school. I was just working. I just moved. I transferred with Office Depot. I was really starting to hate it. I needed a new job, and this job came to me. And I started working with this guy, and I started talking to this guy, and this guy started, you know, forcing me to talk to him. He shared many stories with me, but also forced me to talk to him. He was like, well, tell me some stuff. What's on your mind? What are you doing? What are you up to? And we would go, you know, we would sit in his car and smoke cigarettes, but often we would go to a Shoney's or an IHOP or a Waffle House, all places back then that had smoking sections. And we would sit there and Stu would smoke, and most of the time he would just drink coffee and wouldn't eat anything at all. But sometimes he would eat, you know, an English muffin or something like that, some kind of dessert, which is why it's interesting that they mention that about dessert in the obituary. I knew that Stu was a manager for the team. I think he was managing the team maybe when Jack Kemp and O.J. Simpson played. He actually at least was a part of the team at some point. He talked about to me about, you know, managing the stadium and how in the offseason he would be responsible for filling the stadium with other things. He had, you know, the Rolling Stones place. The Rolling Stones came to play and they wanted their money in cash, and he had to give them multiple $1,000s in cash. I don't know, $100,000 in cash. And they wanted to pick it up with a helicopter, so they would kind of land, I don't know, somewhere at the top of the stadium on their helicopter and collect the money and fly away. He said he locked Eric Clapton. Eric Clapton was so drugged out that they were going to cancel a sold-out show because he couldn't perform. Stu said he chained him into the room and said, I'm not letting you out unless you play. And so they agreed and they went out and they put, he managed to play enough songs. They kind of wheeled him out on the stage. He managed to play enough songs to satisfy the crowd. And then that was it. Yeah, just fun stuff. I mean, I always enjoyed the stories, but you know, the most important thing, he really taught me how to date. I didn't really know how to do it. I didn't know how to treat women. I didn't know how to be respectful, and didn't know how to be direct. And I'm not saying I learned it all right then, but I was still playing a lot of games. But the older I got, the more his advice started to make sense to me. But you know, I took his advice to a T with my first real girlfriend in Charleston, and it worked. You know, me and her were a wreck. We were both alcoholics, and it didn't work out. But the advice worked, and we dated for a while. And, you know, I think his advice, you know, played a role in even my own relationship with my wife now. I mean, had it not been for that advice, maybe I wouldn't have, you know, struck up the kind of conversation that I struck up with Hannah. There's so many things that just, you know, really played a role in my life that I learned from Stu. And it is sad that he's gone. I mean, I've talked about him for so long. You would think that as much as I talked about him, that every time I went to Charleston, I would be trying to hang with him. But every time I go to Charleston, it's like, especially the last few times, it's like fly in, do a show, out the next day. There is no time. And especially in the last 4 years, any time that I've been to go in there, I've also had a kid. You know, I have a baby now. So it's like, The times of just hanging out in Charleston, those days are done. It's just like I don't get to just take these long vacations and just hang out on the beach like I used to. But even during those times when I used to do it, I still wasn't reaching out to Stu. I wanted to go smoke weed and smoke cigars somewhere. And Stu might have had a cigar with me. I don't know. But I really think that me quitting drinking partially ended our hangs, because they were not, I don't know if they were as fun to him. I think Stu wanted to go hang and drink with somebody. And when I wasn't drinking, I don't think it was as fun. Doesn't matter. But this was great. I appreciate you guys just letting me talk about this a little bit. I hope this was interesting to you in any kind of way. The obituary is right out there, and you can see a picture of him. It's a more up-to-date picture of him. I've never actually seen a poster of Stu posted anywhere. It's always those old football cards. So it is nice to see this picture, and I am going to order the book, and hopefully, through getting this book, I'll have some more pictures to share, of Stu. You know, but I don't know. It's just incredible. It's incredible. It's sad. But he did live a good life. And as far as I knew, was a great guy. And he went to church. He was a believer. So I like to believe Stu's in heaven and that I'll see him again. So, all right. Well, guys, I hope that's not been depressing for you. I hope that you weren't out here, a longtime Buffalo Bills fan, driving a Jeep with a bunch of ducks on it today, because this would have not been your episode. All right, but I appreciate you guys. Thank you very much. We're having a good time.